Namaste. So we are bathing in the purifying Ganges of Sri Aurobindo's life. So as we have seen, his life can be divided or seen, not divided because it's a unity, as we have seen the poet, the philosopher, the yogi, the revolutionary, the patriot, the lover of mankind. All these are there in Sri Aurobindo in a seed form while he's in England itself. And then they blossom. But during the blossoming, he plunges into India's freedom struggle, and that is an absorbing preoccupation. But then he realizes at some point, and he is made to realize with the vision of Sri Krishna, that his work lay elsewhere. And so he reaches Pondicherry, which becomes his seat of tapasya. But before we enter into the Pondicherry chapter, we can look back and see what Sri Aurobindo did before coming to Pondicherry. And we can answer a couple of questions that people have with regard to his stay in Baroda and Kolkata, and then his transition to Pondicherry. One question that Sri Aurobindo often raises is that when did he start the yoga? Sri Aurobindo says at one place that his yoga consciously started in 1905. But that is his humility. If you look at Sri Aurobindo, he speaks of the first realization of the self in the mind at the age of 18, when he had read a translation of the Isha Upanishad. Of course, we can say it was not a conscious yoga practice, but yoga experience was there. If you look at his poem at 10, one can see that his subliminal being is already aware of the future that is going to come. And the reason for his coming to India, that also we can glimpse. So when Sri Aurobindo says that his yoga began in 1905, what he means is that he started certain practices in 1905. But his yogic experiences had started earlier, while he was reading the Vedas. And then subsequently when he started writing Savitri, not as Savitri, but Earth and Beyond. And when he had the experience of the Vacant Infinite in 1901, when he had the experience of the World Mother in Karnali. So all these, and of course in Baroda, the carriage accident. So all these are yogic experiences. But yes, conscious yoga in 1905, when he started with intense pranayama. And this intense pranayama he was doing to get Shakti. For what purpose? To free India. And as we see that in that course, he meets Vishnu Bhaskar Lele. Barin has arranged the meeting through his friend K.C. Majumdar. And in their house, they sit for 3 days. And Sri Aurobindo experiences the Nirvana, the first major experience in 1908. And then the second major experience in the same year when he sees Vasudevam Sarvamiti, and he realizes the great truths of the Isha Upanishad, the great truths of the Sanatana Dharma, and Sri Krishna shows to him that what Hindu scriptures are and the truth of the Hindu scriptures. He realizes it, and he realizes that the mission of India is to rise and propound and to spread the Sanatana Dharma, not just by word but by deed, by thought, by action. So all that he realizes, he sees, and then he comes to Pondicherry with a new program. So the second question asked is, what had he accomplished before coming to Pondicherry? Well, he had ignited the freedom struggle. Of course, freedom, there have been freedom struggle movements almost 200 years before 1947. There was the revolt of the Nagas, there was even the uprising in Odisha. There were several movements. And then the famous Sepoy Mutiny of 1847-57. But this Sepoy Mutiny, we know that had been suppressed. After that, there is a big lull. Almost a 50-year lull. Almost it was assumed that nothing really much can happen. And while a party was formed, then the Indian National Congress. But its purpose was to, apparent purpose was to basically have some degree of autonomy. So one can even doubt why the party was formed at all. It was as if to play a dubious role of killing the urge for freedom movement. And in that time, suddenly we see the appearance of Sri Aurobindo, and he ignites and asks for Purna Swaraj. Sri Aurobindo is the first person. Technically, there is somebody else in Maharashtra, I have forgotten his name, not Tilak, but someone else who had spoken of Purna Swaraj. Sri Aurobindo took it and he asked for Purna Swaraj. He asked for, he raised the slogan of Bande Mataram, the war cry of Bande Mataram, which was like a mantra. He stirred the soul of a sleeping nation, literally, as someone has said, that he roused the sleeping lions and he set them on the great task. He gave the lions passive boycott, passive resistance, boycott, Swadeshi, to which he added, along with Swaraj, the national education. So Sri Aurobindo's one reason why he left the freedom movement was because all the large lines along which India had to gain freedom were already set. So he not only ignited or rekindled the flame of freedom once again, made the Indians aware that they can get freedom, shook off their tamas, made them believe that, look here, we are not a fallen race. Because that was the idea at that point of time, drummed into the head. Sri Aurobindo himself, his father had sent him because he thought Anglo-Saxon education is the best, and they are the best because they have succeeded. So he shook off this idea through his writings that and put very clearly, where is the British civilization, where is Indian civilization, what it means. So when we read those writings, we feel suddenly as if we are coming in contact with India's soul. So this was a very major work that he achieved in just a few years' time. Third, he had already started a deep study of the Vedas, Upanishads and the Gita. He was living those truths. He had realized the state of Jivan Mukta, and this laid a foundation for the subsequent commentaries on the Vedas and the Upanishads and the Gita, which are very original, but that we'll come to a little later. Fourth, and this is not generally recognized, he was a teacher, we know, and he was also an acting principal, and for a moment he was also the principal of the Baroda College. But Sri Aurobindo laid down the lines of national education. It's after so many years, and that is when, 1905, 6 or 7. And now the government has started thinking to have a national education, yet not along the lines of Sri Aurobindo. Because he speaks about development of capacities, faculties, and it's so amazing. It's a wonderful document. So he actually laid down the lines of a national education. He laid down the lines of a national health policy and the industry. And he did it through a document which the Maharaja of Baroda presented. But it was written by Sri Aurobindo. And most people are unaware. They have not even read it. And if they read it, even about the health, I had seen during a kind of crisis, what today we call as disaster, how to respond, how to really have the chain of evacuation, all this. So wonderful documents, and in the spirit of Nishkam Karma, he left it. I've gathered my dreams and wrapped them there. So he left all this for us to discover, and mankind is slowly discovering. So this is a very original contribution which he speaks about. We are talking about revival of Indian education now, national education. We are speaking of Gurukul, but Sri Aurobindo has touched the core of Gurukul. Gurukul is not about a teacher sitting, strict disciplinarian who is, you know, teaching people some Sanskrit. Gurukul, the first principle of Gurukul, which he said, how they built a civilization. Sri Aurobindo has spoken of that, and he said one was Brahmacharya and the second was not to shy away from thinking, original thinking. And he has given all these steps through which India can recover that state. So he, you know, explained that. Fifth, he brought to the world the true meaning of dharma, and still we are translating dharma as religion. If you read through Sri Aurobindo's whole writing, these are a set of Bengali writing. The name of the journal was Dharma. And there we see him revealing to us what dharma is, what Hindu dharma is, how the Hindu looks at dharma, right and wrong, and what is that Western moral concept. For instance, West sees actions, but Hindu sees motives. If you catch this clue, you will understand a lot of things. So, plenty of work that he did just while there as a as a writer, as a journalist, and of course in poem, in Sanskrit he wrote a poem which is a remarkable poem, of course, Bhavani Bharati. He was already experimenting with different kinds of meter, but all that work comes later. Third question, which we have already answered, why did he suddenly leave the freedom struggle suddenly? Well, three reasons. First and foremost is because he had the command of Sri Krishna. Divine command cannot be ignored. That supersedes everything else. So he left it. We can almost imagine a situation where Sri Krishna leaves the gopis in Vrindavan and transits to Mathura. And all of them are crying. They all would see, for bridge, Krishna meant everything. Why did he leave it? Well, Krishna's moj, as they say. So Sri Aurobindo left because he had the clear command from Sri Krishna to leave and eventually Chandanagar and Chandanagar to Pondicherry. He had to obey the command. Second, already he had laid down all the lines along which India has to achieve freedom, but he was aware that now some other instrument is destined to come. Third, he had started preparing youth for an armed revolt, but he realized that it is both impractical and people are not ready. And fourth, which is as important, he was moving far ahead of its times. And at one point, mother says, Sri Aurobindo deeply loved his motherland and he did not want it to sink low as we see in politics. So even that time, we can see how much selfishness had entered politics. When you look at 1907, split of Surat and people wanting, craving for chair, for position. So Sri Aurobindo wanted to bring in that dimension in politics which Sri Krishna brought, which is politics based entirely on dharma. No appeasement, no trying to, you know, maintain the chair. Sri Krishna is an example. He could have said, I'll lead the Mahabharata war from the side of Pandavas and the crown of victory would have been on his head. He doesn't do that. He gives the crown of victory to Arjun. Himself he becomes a sarathi. That's called leading by example. And the same thing Sri Aurobindo did. He left the crown for others and went on to bring the kingdom of heaven upon earth. So that is the fifth and last reason, that he had seen there is a much greater work. And while political emancipation of India is necessary and it is going to come, yet emancipation of India, change of governance is not enough, because the world moves in cycles. After some time, unless man changes, it will again collapse back. So he had seen, he was shown very clearly that unless man changes, everything that man will do will always remain imperfect. So that's about his work in the revolutionary, as a revolutionary. Third or fourth question people ask, and that question is about his personal life, domestic life. He was married. But very few people are aware that he remained a brahmachari, not just because he didn't have a child. He mentions it in one of his casual conversation to a friend, and also to Dinendra Kumar Roy, who comes, and when he has come to teach him Bengali, and he expects that, you know, in Baroda, he comes to teach him Bengali in Baroda, and he thinks that, well, he will meet a suited, booted, Cambridge returned fellow, but Sri Aurobindo in his dhoti and lying on mat, and he says, Hari, I was expecting something else. He said, but why? I am a brahmacharin and I am a Hindu. So don't you know that this is how we are supposed to live? So everything he was doing was setting an example. There is another work which he did during that period. And then we'll talk about a little more about his domestic life. And that thing was that as a linguist, he had mastered 12 languages minimum. And this linguistic skill or the capacity would come to great use later on, when he found the missing links between Tamil and Sanskrit, a work which people don't know. Sometime back, someone had written inspired by these so-called parties which create an Aryan Dravidian divide. So one of the politicians had made some talk about Tamil and vis-a-vis the ashram. And I had written a rejoinder. I said, do you know that Sri Aurobindo is the one and only one who has given the links between Tamil and Sanskrit, who agrees that both are very ancient languages, and he has appreciated Andals, and he has even translated some of the poems of Tamil. I said, you are not aware that what he has contributed to Tamil culture and Tamil land. So well, there was no reply as expected because these are political things. But essentially, his work in linguistic area and based on linguistic, he was not the first one because Aryan invasion theory was being refuted also by Swami Vivekananda, but first who gave a philological basis for refuting the Aryan Dravidian theory. So all this he had done. So what do we call it? He was a genius. Even as a human, he is a genius by this time. And then he goes to Pondicherry. He already got two major experiences and several other experiences in his jholi. You know, people go taking a jholi, Parivarajaks. What was he carrying in his jholi? He was carrying all this with him. Yog Vibhuti as well as world Vibhuti. Whatever you can achieve in world, name, fame, everything he had achieved. Whatever you could achieve by yoga, he had achieved. Nirvana and the Vasudevam Sarvamiti. So what was left? Why did he come to Pondicherry? He came because there was a greater work which was not yet even attempted, not even in the Vedas, not even by the rishis of the Upanishads, which was sometimes glimpsed. And that work was the emancipation of earth and mankind. So his whole coming to Pondicherry was not his seat of his personal tapasya, that he engaged in yoga. Somebody who has realized Vasudevam Sarvamiti, what yoga is he engaging in? He was doing the yoga of the earth, for the earth. And then when he comes to Pondicherry, he is given a program of yoga. He had already started writing a record of yoga from 1909. And he was given a program of yoga, which he mentions first in a letter to Barin, that the Lord of the worlds has given me the 10 limbs of the yoga. So he also added to all these things, gave a new yoga for earth and mankind, with not just a new method, which we see often, some pranayam, which is a new pranayam, some new meditation technique, but the goal is ultimately the same, moksha, individual moksha. But his new yoga is meant to, he put before earth and mankind a new goal. So there is a new goal to the new yoga. So the yoga is meant to lead to the goal of transformation of earthly life, which if we have to use in our common parlance, well, the kingdom of heaven upon earth and establishing a Ram Raj or a Sat Yog, whatever way we want to look at it, but with its deepest, fullest meaning, because otherwise we have our own hazy meanings about it. So this, for this yoga, 10 limbs were given, but nowhere you will find a reference to the 10 limbs. But one finds the program that is given to him in his records of yoga, and that is called Sapta Chatushtha, meaning thereby there was a sevenfold tapasya on all the four aspects of dimensions of nature. And this 7 × 4, Sapta Chatushtha, he writes the program. These the yoga is there in Sanskrit, then the English translation, some of his experiences. So this yoga he was doing for earth and mankind, first to open the path, because this yoga is maybe at some point there were glimpses. And I can only remember a parallel when Shri Krishna says that I first gave this yoga to the sun god Vivaswan, but over a period of time this yoga was lost. So now I am reviving this yoga. So we don't know whether this yoga in any form was practiced or not. But this question was asked to Sri Aurobindo. He says, well, there should have been some sign of some transformed being. And by transformation, he did not mean in some jnana ganj, in some other dimension. That is known. That Sri Aurobindo says. That's always possible. Somebody transiting to Vaikuntha or some other dimension, or making a Gupta Gufa in Himalaya. That doesn't solve the problem of earth. But the moment you step out, if it would have solved the problem, yogis would be walking amongst us and in that, you know, that body which is not subject to degeneration and help mankind. So they would not be hiding behind the veil and helping. I'm not saying they're not helping, but the need for a veil, because earth is not ready. So whatever it be, whatever the speculations apart, at least we do not know any such yoga on earth which will eventually lead to the transformation of mankind. But I have my own understanding about the 10 limbs, because people often ask, what were the 10 limbs? Sri Aurobindo spoke of these 7 limbs, Sapta Chatushtha. So my understanding is that 7 is already described. Then you add to it before you enter into Sapta Chatushta, because before Sri Aurobindo enters into Sapta Chatushta, he has already had the 2 major realizations. So first is the Akshara Brahma, if you want to put it, the stillness, the silence of Nirvana, by whatever door you want to see. And the second is realizing the one divine everywhere through this psychic door, because that's the door through which you glimpse. So these 2 are there before the 7. Because in Sapta Chatushta you don't find mention of this. What is the 10th? 10th is the final conquest of the spirit over matter. So that's how the 10 limbs, so out of which 7, 2 he had already realized, 7 he is given to him. And the last is left as the great possibility towards which he has to work. So how long did he carry on with the yoga? Well, till 1926. So his personal yoga is complete on 24th November 1926. That's why it's called as the Siddhi Day. Siddhi is not here about certain yoga siddhi. That he had plenty. In the jail he had experienced Uthapana Siddhi, Vyapti, Prakame, all these things. But the final siddhi, fulfillment of the yoga, and it's there in the notes. He stopped writing the diary in 1927. And 1926 November, I think it's 18th June or around that period, I'm forgetting the date, when he says that basically the Siddhi is complete. Just some last traces were left of some ego in the Annamaya Kosha, the bodily ego, all this. But one can see that the Siddhi is more or less complete. So his personal yoga for earth and mankind, not personal yoga for himself, but the new yoga, he's the pathfinder. So he has to, you know, it's all forest. In the forest of life, he has to, I won't use the word cutting the trees because there will be objection, but he has to clear the way, he has to lay down the path, make it secure for others to walk over it. All this he has done till 1926. What happens after 1926 is a little later. But suddenly something beautiful and unexpected, or the expected and the inevitable happens. And we can see with the smile, it's the coming of the mother. So 1914, 29th March, he is joined by the mother. And how the mother came, that's a whole, we'll talk about it when we speak about mother's life. Suffice it to say, she herself described from her childhood, she used to have extraordinary spiritual experiences, meet spiritual beings, yogis from the past, avatars, masters. But with one being, she formed a stable, constant relation. Since what years? How many years of age? 10 or 11. That's how she describes. And she used to call him Krishna. She had no idea about Indian mythology, Indian thought or Krishna. Later on, she realized Krishna also before coming to Pondicherry. She had mastered Buddhist yoga. She had realized the yoga of the Gita. After reading, you know, a book, all this she had realized. She already had made a program of the future transformation, which is there in 1912, before coming to Sri Aurobindo. And so it was natural that they have to meet. Both of them were moving toward the same line in their own way. So then 1914, when she meets, those circumstances are very amazing. They realize that this is what they have to work together. And immediately the mother started. Because she knew, Sri Aurobindo knew, this is the work which they have to do. She recognized in him the avatar. And the mother recognized, and Sri Aurobindo recognized in her that she is a born free. Mira is born free. And many other things besides. She recognized the complete possibility of complete surrender, which was the condition for divine life. He also recognized that it's only if Mira takes the leading, divine mother's name, then this yoga can be given to all. Otherwise, he could fulfill it in himself. But for the world to practice this yoga is near impossible. And mother started this work. She started this work and 3 things she started. One was the honesty society. Business is the most difficult part. Finances and politics are the 2 most difficult areas to change. Sri Aurobindo had entered politics, but he realized that politics will take a long time to change. The mother started business honesty society. Chain of business. That time it was just one store. that business can be done with honest means. Second thing, she started a group of some people who could meet together. It's what today's parlance will use the word study circle. But it was, they used to pick up new idea, because earth has to bring in a new idea. What is that new idea? The idea of transformation. We'll talk about that later on. So new idea, and in that new idea, they would now, the mind of man had to be prepared among the few for something new which is going to come upon earth. She had already started this kind of a group in Paris itself. And the third thing she starts is, at her prompting, Sri Aurobindo starts writing in the Arya. Otherwise, Sri Aurobindo is living in that Himalayan solitude. But the mother's coming opens the heart of Shiva. And Shiva's heart, when it opens, love flows, new creation will start. So the new creation starts through the Arya. Arya, now it's all available as collected works of Sri Aurobindo. Of course, not everything is there in Arya, but major works are there in Arya. The Life Divine, the Synthesis of Yoga, it's a whole subject in itself. It was a monthly journal of 64 pages. Initially, account maintenance, few things were maintained by the mother and her husband. But then, after about 9 months, in February, 22nd February, after her birthday, mother had to leave. About 11 months. Why she had to leave? Because the First World War intervened. The forces in the vital world, the Edwards forces, knew this is getting too dangerous. So they wanted to kidnap Sita, like Ramayana. They couldn't kidnap her, but almost they succeeded by taking the mother away, because the war situation became such that she couldn't have stayed. She's a French citizen, so she had to go. Because in the war, everybody has to work, and she also took up her work. But that's a different story. Here, Sri Aurobindo was left with editing the 64 pages of journal every month all by himself. But he would do it whole night. He would sit on the typewriter and everything would come in through a silent mind, and he would write. And mother was helping, of course, and there is a communication between them. The Arya Publishing House in Kolkata was publishing. So this is how the Arya went into the world, a new thought, a new idea. A thought was sown in the insensible void. A word is spoken, the ages toil to express, as Savitri says. So world over, suddenly some Americans picked up, other places picked up, because Arya could manage, sustain itself. At the same time, the thought reached far. What is that thought? The new idea. So that was how it began. In 1920, the mother comes back. And this time for good. Those circumstances we can talk about later. But with her coming, now there is a greater assurance. Now the yoga is entering a decisive phase. All that the mother does, she knows what is this new work, something which has never been tried before. Certainly not at this scale. Maybe glimpsed from far off. And then the mother, all that she asks Sri Aurobindo inwardly, will it be for this time? Meaning thereby, together they have worked on this for who knows how many lives. And all that Sri Aurobindo says is yes. And she sees a massive descent of the supramental consciousness upon earth. And then there is the assurance. She stays for good. But she remains more and more. She is only taking some care of Sri Aurobindo. And she is hardly communicating. She is remaining inwards, indoor. Some people began to glimpse the divinity she is. And they would quietly ask Sri Aurobindo, that yogin from Europe, she seems to be a great yogin. Amrita, and Sri Aurobindo says, yes, indeed. But she doesn't give us meditation. And Sri Aurobindo says, yes. But one day, impelled by the divine work, she will come out. And that indeed will be a great divine day. So that happens. And she started creating, she started doing two things. Now Sri Aurobindo is more and more getting into the background, because mother has started taking. There is no official taking charge. But she has started more and more. In 1926 specifically, people were being sent to the mother more and more by Sri Aurobindo to give meditation, to have their problems discussed with her. And slowly they started connecting with the mother, and the mother would give answers, she would solve the problems. She was known as the Sphinx even as early as in a school. And then people began to realize a little bit who she is. Then finally, in 1926, she started on one side take all the poison and people's difficulties, all their imperfections into herself. And she fell seriously ill. So this was one part. But then of course she recovered. And she had to, because that's how she started. That's how she's the mother. On the other hand, she started creating a Deva Srishti. So her method was very different. You don't do the yoga, I'll do the yoga. So she started calling the gods to take charge of the human vessels. And the gods at her call came. That's a very interesting occult chapter of ashram life. She would give meditation, these gods would come. So these gods would come and they would start influencing the disciples. Some of them would incarnate or almost get influenced by the godhead Brahma. Someone by some other godhead, Varun, Nalnida, so on and so forth. Then in 1926, the mother goes to Sri Aurobindo and she says that a god creation of the overmind, as Sri Aurobindo says, plane of the gods, that has been realized. He says, I know that, but that's not enough. Why that's not enough? Because he says, even if you create a godlike humanity, still being the overmind creation, even this at some point will be vulnerable. And we see this. Even gods, ultimately, it's not that they are completely immune. So there is always this Devasur Sangram where they are always a tussle. They push back the Asura in their place. But Asura is there and human beings are under double influence. Unless you change the Asuras, you cannot have the final solution. The mother had tried to change the Asura while she was in Japan. And that's a different story, we'll talk about it. But then Sri Aurobindo says, this alone is not sufficient. Maybe we can create an isolated humanity which is godlike, but it won't have that kind of a ultimate, whole earth cannot be taken up by this and it will remain vulnerable. So nothing short of the perfect perfection, which is the supramental. So the mother starts preparing for this supramental perfection. But gods were there, so she asked the gods, see, up till now you were influencing, incarnating upon their souls, all that is fine. Will you tie yourself to the human bodies? Because now the work has to be ultimately on the body. Unless the body changes, nothing permanent can be done. This is the Aadhar. So the God said, no, no, we'll help you in the work. We'll help, somebody will bring money, somebody will do something. Shiva says, I can help, but I won't incarnate right now. I'll come when supramental body is ready. He says, I can break the ego of people. Tandav. So the mother herself first offers for the physical ego. That's a very fascinating story. Except Sri Krishna. He says, I'll tie myself to a physical body. Whose body is ready to hold? Sri Krishna, but Sri Aurobindo. So Sri Krishna was guiding him since the actually revolutionary days. Because he says, I have brought you here to the jail. So, of course, he came first as Kali. And that's why Sri Aurobindo says, Bande Matram, Durga Strot, and you know, Bhavani Bharati. And Sri Krishna, he writes in one of the aphorisms, who can bear Sri Krishna, he whom Kali already possesses, and vice versa. So, Kali prepared. Kali is the other side of Sri Krishna, Shyam and Shyama. And Sri Krishna was with him consciously, to his consciousness from 1908. 1926, that whole process comes to a, we can say, grand culmination when Sri Krishna ties himself to Sri Aurobindo's body, fuses with Sri Aurobindo's body, becomes one in identity on 24th November 1926. His personal yoga is complete, the siddhi is complete. And then starts the third phase, a very major work. And that is, of course, as we see that Shurbindo, who is up till now, as we have seen him as a poet, his poetry took on a new turn from 1916, incidentally, Savitri started. Who is a poet, who is a mystic writer, if you want to put it, author, journalist, who has written such lovely things about India, who is an Indologist, because he is given the new Nirukta by Sri Krishna. So the Veda, Upanishads and Gita are interpreted on the basis of the new etymology which has been given by Sri Krishna. So all this work he has already done during this period. So he is yog, he has become yogi, yogi of yogis, and with the fusion of Sri Krishna we can say he has become yog yogeshwar, because all the different aspects of yoga are laid bare to him. He has developed Trikal Drishti, so we can imagine what a rare yogi or yogis of yogis he is. And now what is left? Now from 1926 we see now Shobindo is the avatar, the great declaration of the Gita, and that mission he is fully ready. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma sansthapana sthaye sambhavami yoge yoge. So that chapter will have the final culminating part in this trilogy.